And so the Gemara begins on Samach Vav with asking B'mai Kamifre. So what is the bottom line between these two approaches? Because the first approach utilized, that's the Brayta de Veirav, the first approach utilized the Liminehu, first the Limino, and then the three Limineos which follow, to tell us other species that are similar. So is there really any difference? And we know, of course, what the answer is. Obviously, there's a difference. Because the only way that we ended up knowing that a stick type of grasshopper that has no round head is included is because we had the extra word sol'an. But that word is only extra according to the Tana Devei Rabbi Yishmael. It is not extra according to the original Braita, because each one of the minim was actually a specific limud, and each one of them had a subspecies that was associated with it. So there's a tremendous difference between these two brayta. So let's see that inside today. So if that's the case, what is the real matter of halacha? That the Teraskayanim and the Tana Devei Rabbi Yishmael are arguing about? They are arguing about Rosho Aroch. Their problem is whether we have that extra pasuk to tell me the Rosho Aroch. Now, the Tana Devei Rav holds that what we have over here is a klal uprat, l'chora. And because if they're not going to darshan it the way the Tana Devei Rabbi Yishmael is, each one of these are pratim. So therefore, that includes the main species and it includes the limineu. Because those limineus are limited to just an expansion of a particular species. So therefore, we have Asher lo kra'ayim, and then we've got all of these pratim. The arbe, the sol'am, the chargol, the chagav, and the question is, the limineu, according to the Teraskayanim, we'll see why, is not another klal, and therefore we do not have a klal prat or klal. It's actually another prat, because it's just an expansion of one of the four particular kinds. Therefore, what we have is a klal or prat. But a klal or prat, what's the rule? Ein bichlal ela mashe beprat, which means only the minim that are mentioned beferish in the pasuk, which do not include anything that has a long head. So that means ein bichlal ela mashe beprat, which would mean these particular species, including the expansion of the species, which is the mine. So anything that's a subspecies is included. But if it's not one of these, then it's not included. So what does Laminoi come to include? Only things that are fully the same as the main species mentioned. So it has to be similar to it on all sides, what we call Shnei Stadim. Doesn't mean two out of three or anything like that. It means from all sides. And therefore, we don't have a single example here of a type of chagav with a long head, and therefore, according to the Teraskayanim, those are not kosher to eat. Whereas the Tana Devei Rabbi Yishmael darshened the entire thing as klal prat uklal, klal prat uklal. So therefore, what we had is asher lo kra'ayim, that's a klal at the beginning of the pasuk. Each one of these minim is a different prat. Arba, sol'am, chargol, chagav is a prat. But each one of them is followed by its own klal, liminehu, which is an expansion. So therefore, we have a klal, prat, or klal. Yatadan ela ke'ina prat. And according to the Tana Devei Rabbi Yishmael, it needs to be similar, not in every possible way, but in the end, we learn out from Sol'am that in this particular case, it is enough to be similar as the Mishnah said. It's got four legs, it's got two kra'ayim, it's got four wings, and the wings are chofim es rubo, and the rest of it doesn't matter. Okay, this is how the end we came out. The problem is today, asks the Gemara, that these are fascinating halachas in klal prat or klal that we really find here as the basis of a lot of mentions all over Shas of Dinim in Klal Prat or Klal, Riboy Miut Riboy. So this is an extremely fundamental daf in terms of understanding the Yud Gimel Midas. And the Gemara's question, and I want to remind you yesterday of the fundamental issue of whether the Klala Basra is the Iker or the Klala Kama is the Iker. Because remember, the question is the Klal Prat of Klal fundamentally adding the way the final Klal, which otherwise would have been a Prat of Klal, and the final Klal is Marbe everything, or is it primarily limiting to the similarity to the Prat, because a Klal uprat without a Klal at the end would have been limited only to the Prat, in which case the Klal at the end is just turning it to as long as it's fully similar to the Prat. You see, okay, so that was the question of whether we can use a Klal Prat or Klal in which something is similar in every way. Must it be similar in every way? Or is it enough if it's similar in the fundamental ways, which we need obviously to make a judgment on, which over here our judgment was, as the Mishnah says, the four legs, the two kra'ayim, the four wings, and the wings that are chof and esruba. So now we have a general question. Does a klal prat uklal have to be parallel, meaning that both klalim seem to be unencumbered by a particular link to a particular thing? They are truly klalim, or do they not? Now, in this case, the two klalim are very dissimilar, because the first klal is anything which has these kra'ay, is kosher. And that's like cuts across all these different species. Masha'enke, the last klal, is limited to something that is similar to either the chargol or to the arbet. That means either it has a tail, or it dafka doesn't have a tail, or it has a baldy, or it doesn't have a baldy. So it's not an unlimited klal. It's a rather funny kind of klal, a specific klal, but specific means prat. Okay, so the question is, can you make a klal prat of klal out of a very dissimilar klals? That's the question. And this is the Gemara's next question. Vahalodomi klala kama l'klala batra. In this case, the two klals are not the same. Klala kama is very broad. It says anything like it says in the pasuk. Asher lo kra'ayim, as long as it's got these jumpers. And that means if it's got it, you can eat it. If you don't got it, you can't eat it. And it's very simple. Eat le'achol, delet le'lo techol. But the klala batra, oh my gosh, that's very limited. It's got to be similar to at least the four main things, even if you go through all of it. Each one of these klalim is actually similar in five ways, right? Because it would be those four general rules, plus until we get to the point at which we can make the tzad hashaveh, we'd have to take into consideration the gabachat or the zanav and so on. Okay, so in this case, can you do that? Well, actually, you see from here that according to the Tana Devei Rabbi Shmuel, you most certainly can. And this is actually where we learn that the Tana Devei Rabbi Shmuel, that uses klal prat uklal, of course, from the beginning of the Sifri, we're very familiar with this, is coming from the Tana Devei Rabbi Shmuel. And the Rabbi Shmuel expounds on all of this. So the Tana Devei Rabbi Shmuel actually considers that to be a perfectly valid klal prat uklal, even though the two klalim are not balanced. One of them is broad and one of them is wrapped up in a particular group. It doesn't matter. The Tana Devei Rabbi Shmuel, bichloli uprate ki hagavna doyin. They actually do use this type of klal uprat. And actually, you'll recall that we saw this in many, many places across Shas. And this happens to be the fundamental place from where we learned it. The Amrina Nami B'Alba. We're all over Shas. We keep learning that Doin Tana Devei Rabbi Shmuel Becholoi Oprate, that Klal Prater Klal, according to Rabbi Shmuel, includes Kihai Gavna. That comes from, guess where? Right here, Me'acha. This is the root limud in which we see clearly that the Tana Devei Rabbi Shmuel, this is a fantastic example of a klal basra and a klal kama that are not similar to each other. All right, so far we've learned an awful lot. Let's continue and see the ending of that, which was the last one of the four, which was the chagav, that taught us that its name has got to be chagav. Now let's talk about that. If you said in the Brayta something that, I didn't stop you while you were talking, but it did not make any sense. You said that if it's a given that Chagav, the Shem Chagav, is fundamental, and only if it's Shmo Chagav, so then you said, well, maybe we don't need all the Arba Simanim. Maybe all that we need is Shmo Chagav. Yocholein b'kol ha-simanim alalu. That's why when it says Chagav, it says Elimineu with the Chagav. To tell me it's not enough just to have the name Chagav, but it also has to have the various things that we found in all of these meanings. Now, that part I didn't understand at all. What in the world was that supposed to mean? How could you have thought that all of the Limudim are not Nogea? If its name is Chagav, it would be kosher. How is that? I don't understand. Did we not just learn that out of Arbe and Chargol? We learned from there that you need the common denominator. We said, what's the Tzad HaShoveh of the maximally differentiated Arbe on the one hand and Chargol on the other? It was the fact that you had these four things in common. Where do you come off all of a sudden because of this new requirement of Chagav to now say, well, maybe we don't need any requirements except Chagav? This is making sense to me. Well, I'll tell you something. Remember that what we understood yesterday was that the presentation in the Pasuk was a presentation based on gradation. So we went from the Arba to the Sol Am, and that was a great way to present it because of the Gapachat issue. And then we went from the Sol Am to the Chargol, which was a great way to present it because of the Zanav issue, right? But once we had the Arba and the Chargol, the Sol Am had no value, remember? Because given the Arba and the Chargol together, we have the maximally differentiated Yesh Gapachat, no Gapachat, Yesh a tail, Zanav, or no tail, which remember wasn't really a tail, but looks like a tail. So it's the ovipositor, really. But in any event, the Sol Am ended up being an extra pasuk. Now we used that Sol Am yesterday with the classic limut called Im Eino Inyan La X, Neo Inyan La Y. What was the Im Eino Inyan La X? Anything that we learned out already. And what was the Y? Well, yesterday we said the Y was the long heads. And if the head, therefore, looks like a stick and it's one of those incredible kind of grasshoppers that just melts into the branch and it looks like a stick of wood and so on, you don't even see a head on it, that's okay. It would still be kosher as long as it had the four simanim. So, remember that Sol Am was available for an extra limud. We were the ones who decided what that extra limud was. So maybe, you see, if it hadn't said Sol Am, you'd be right. Iloktiv Sol Am, Kirika Am. You'd be right. It's an insane thought. Why would I think that mentioning Chagav would be enough to cancel out the requirement for the other meaning? That's absurd. So, I don't know. Now it's claiming it's changing my mic. Can you still hear me okay? All right. So now, it says Sol Am l'ribuya rosho aruch. Maybe Sol Am is a much broader ribuy, and it would include the same way that we saw that. Maybe it would be Marba together with Chagav, everything, and not just the long heads, as long as it was called the Chagav, because we said we had this Im Eino Inyan that really expanded things completely. Kamash Malan, that's why we have Elimineu. No. This is not meant to be an alternative, and it used it as an Imeno Inyan for everything. Actually, it still is an added requirement to the four given requirements. Now, by the way, I just have a side point that's really been bothering me the whole time, and I'd like just if you could clear something up to me. Because the names of the species that you said in the two Braytot are different. First, in that first Braytot, which we're calling the Beirav, the one from the Torah Kani, you said that the Sol Am is Rashon and Chargol is Nipul. And then when you came to the Tana Devei Rabbi Shmuel, you flipped it. You said that the Sol'am is the Nipul and the Chargol is the Rasho. Now, how do you explain that? I mean, I thought we were looking at the particular yes gabachat, no gabachat, and that we were basing this on biological identifications and not just on like stam abakak, pick a species at random. No. That's because there were different, everybody is agreed on what they are. The Sol'am is the one that doesn't have the tail. The Chargol is the one that does have the tail. That's for sure. The question is, what was the name that was given in local language to that species? But they're definitely exactly the same. There's no difference between the two. It's just Marchiatria, Marchiatria. So in one place they used to call the one with the tail, they called it the Roshon, and in one place they called it the Nipo. But basically, we're not in any way arguing with each other. Okay, so that completes our discussion about the Chagavim, and it turns out that we have a machlokas about whether yes to include the Rosh Aruch, not to include the Rosh Aruch, and it turns out that in the end we actually would need to be able to identify these things in terms of the halacha through a Mesorah, that this is one of the names, it's called Chagav, and that we can properly identify what is meant by the Kartzulayim, what is meant by the four wings, and what is meant by Chofin as Ruban.
Could Rebbe please go over what the Yesod is here that we're saying it's Rebbe Shmuel all over, it's like this? What is that Yesod?
I'm happy to go over it. I thought I did a great job at explaining it the first time, and quite frankly, I'm happy to go over it. The question over here is, remember that we're dealing with Klal Pratu Klal, which is an extremely complex and a very meaningful issue in the Torah, which we know is a big machlokas, whether we even have a right to view it as Klal Pratu Klal. That's the way we understand. The general way to approach the Torah is that it is structured according to sets. And that's a very important element of Klal Pratu Klal. We're going to be getting to discussion of that a little bit later. Versus Ribui Miut Ribui, which means that it's not sets, it's examples and either limitations and expansions of examples, but not sets. So Klal Pratu Klal is a way of dealing with sets. And there are two fundamental issues about Klal Pratu. One is that there's a klal prat, and there's a prat klal. And then there's a klal prat u klal. And that's the way that it's presented in the Yud Gimel Midas. So the klal u prat, again, is anything in the klal is limited by the prat. And there's nothing else but the prat. And the klal was given for information about what's involved, about how it's involved, but what is involved is limited by the prat. The other way, the prat u klal, is that a prat is an example of an idea that is maximally expanded by the klal, and wherever any element of that idea shows up, that's enough for it to be a general, either heter or iser, as the case may be, unless you're like Brucey and you're falling asleep. But if Brucey, there we go. Okay. So now, if you put the two together, we were wondering, is this fundamentally an expansion of the prat, or is it fundamentally a limitation of the prat? Which part is the important part? But one thing is for sure, that a klal prat uklal is a combination of the klal and the prat, and the prat and the klal. Now, the question is, when do I make that combination? Do I need it to be clearly interrelated so that the two types of klalim are similar? They're both broad generalizations with an example in between them. Or could it be a case like this, where you started off with a very broad generalization? Anything that has kartzulayim is kosher. And then you start going through very limited klalim, because you only have a limineu, which is limited to things that are like a particular species, which goes way beyond kartzulayim. we've got all of those other three simonim besides the Karzulayim, plus an additional simon of either Rosho, of either Gabachat or Enlo Gabachat or Yeshlo Zanav or Enlo Zanav. So it's very, very dissimilar. Is this really a klal, prat, or klal? Or is it two separate things? There's a klal and a prat and a klal, but you can't put it together to say ke'in prat, which is the rule of klal, prat, or klal. So it's from here that we derive that since the whole brice of the Torah Nevei Rabbi Shmuel, in this case, is built around this type of mismatch between the opening klal and the closing klal, we have a rule that the Torah Nevei Rabbi Shmuel is derech klal, prat, or klal, even where there are mismatched klalim. Okay, clear? Fine. Now, let's move on to the next piece of the Mishnah. The next piece of the Mishnah, what we've discussed so far in this perek, is we've discussed the different dinim of what is considered to be shosa, shesa, what is the identification of the minim of the mammals, and obviously what is included under chaya in terms of what is treifa, what is not treifa, which was the main opening topic. We've talked about the birds and whether we're able to make any general rules out of the birds and understanding the differences between the 24 different types of birds, at least according to Rav. We discovered maybe there's only 23. Also, general names that could end up with hundreds and thousands of different variants. And now we just finished our discussion about the Chagavim, which ones are kosher, which ones are not. But we have the Mishnah that continues on with the fish. So when it comes to fish, things seem pretty straightforward. B'dagim kol shigesh lo snapir v'kaskeset, as it says in the Pasuk, you're allowed to eat anything that's got a snapir, which is a fin, and kaskeset, which is scales, and we said even a single scale is really kosher. Now, there is a very important limud that most people are not even aware of. And that is, if you look carefully at the psukim of the fish, you will see a fascinating thing. Let me read you the two psukim that define the fish, and we'll pay close attention, and we'll see that there's an amazing halacha over here, which tells us you don't always need snapir v'kaskeset. There may be some kind of fish, and remember, fish mean water-dwelling animals. They do not mean fish in the English biological sense of fish.
So beware the psukim so we can follow.
Oh, excellent question. The psukim are in Shemini. If you'll take a look in Perek Yud Alev in Vayikra, Ori, you have your chumash open, I'm assuming, with all the pictures of the nice fishies. Okay, so on Pasuk Tet in Yud Alef, et ze tochlu mikol asher bamai. This is what you can eat, anything that lives in water, anything. Kol asher lo snapir v'kaskeset. Now look at this, b'mayim. I mean, that's a little silly, isn't it? You just said this is what you can eat in the water. So why does it say anything that has scales and fins? I mean, in the water? Obviously in the water, that's what you said. And then it gets worse. It's not just in the water. It's b'yamim u'v'anechalim, if it would be in the seas and in the rivers. Otam tochelu. That's what you can eat. Now, what about if it's not in the seas and the rivers? Huh? What about then? What about if it is something that you find in your water cistern, which turns out to be full of all kinds of bugs that live in the water and that essentially have reproduced in the water and don't even seem to have reproduced at all because we don't see them reproducing. We just see them growing in the water. Can't even make out their eggs. So what's the din? Here the Pasuk seems to be saying that this concept of needing a fin and needing scales, that's only applicable in the seas. It's not an applicable criterion when it comes to, let's say, something that was in a container. You had a bottle of water, you come back and it's got bugs in it. Can you drink the bugs? Yes, it says over here you can drink the bugs. But how? They don't have fins and scales. Doesn't matter because they're not in the sea, right? That's what the pasuk seems to be saying. That is the opening pasuk, which tells you what you can eat. Then the next pasuk tells you what you cannot eat. V'chol asher ein lo snabir v'kaskeset, but where? Bayamim uvanechalim. Oh, so here too it says, if it doesn't have a snabir v'kaskeset, and you're talking about something that's in a yam or a nachal, mikol sheret samayim, umikol nefesh chaya asher b'mayim, that is sheket same lochem. But again, what if it's not in the Yamim and in the Nechalim? How about then? Would you be allowed to eat it even if it doesn't have this Napir Vekas Keset? Apparently, you would. Now, in order to understand these psukim clearly, we need to note that Yamim u'Nechalim, there's different ways of understanding. What characterizes the general klal? What is the set of Yamim u'Nechalim? So we've got the thing which is maximally different. That is a water bottle with a Brita filter in your refrigerator that is full of bugs. That's the maximal difference, right? Then we've got things that are very similar. I mean, I've got a pond. It's not a river, and it's not a sea. It's a pond. How about that? How about if it's a cistern? It's in the ground, but it's not flowing. How about if it's in a kind of little rivulet of a stream? It's flowing, but don't look anything like a sea. So that's a question. How exactly are we going to identify what the pasuk means when it says it has to be similar to Yamim u'Nechalim? So we're going to be analyzing now these psukim, not just what type of fish are kosher according to the basic simanim of the Snapir v'Kaskesen. So let's start at the top and recognize that we're going to have some kind of serious issues with understanding what it means when it talks about the Yamim and the Nechalim. So,
I mean, the negative sukkim are not relevant, even though they're still talking about Snapir v'Kaskesen, we don't need them.
You want to read them for us?
V'sheket zu lechem, mibzaram lo sochelu, v'iznib lasam t'sheket zu, kol asher ein lo snapir v'kaskeset b'mayim, sheket zu lechem, without talking about Yamim u'Nechalim. That's what he's wondering.
You said the next two psukim.
That was two.
Okay. Thank you. So those two psukim are based on what has been identified in the previous pasuk, the Gemara assumes, right? So it's just expanding on what the sheketz is. We'll have to see what the additional value of repeating that it's sheketz ulachem, and that we discuss about the multiple lavim and so on later on. But right now, the question is, what is being identified as kosher and what is identified as non-kosher? So let's first start with simple questions that are very nogea la'alacha, especially tuna fish. And this is one of the big, as you know, big modern controversies in which there was a rabbi in New York that insisted that tuna fish is absolutely treif. And this was like one of the big scandals, the 20th century scandals. Anyway, so this is the Gemara's next question. Tana Rabbanan. So how about if you've got a fish that only develops these fins and scales later on in its life and starts off without them, such as Gagot, Hasultanit, or Ha'afiyan. So, okay, I don't know, what these are. There's all kinds of hasharot, and there's modern identifications referring to sardines, which don't have fins and scales when they're small. Could be. It's still kosher, so it really doesn't matter. Arei zeh mutar. And the inverse is also true. Suppose a fish starts off with fins and scales, and then atid lahashiran b'sha'ah sho'oleh min ha'mayim. But as it fights its way not to be pulled out of the yam, it actually loses, with the rubbing and so on, it loses its scales. What happens? Such as the yakunus and the afunus and the ksiftias and the achspatias and the atunus, that's the identified with the tuna fish, and this is in fact the way that the tuna fish is. And this seems to be a machlokas, because Rashi says the tunina, and so maybe, okay, maybe it really is the tunina. Yeah, it's very hard to know what these loazis Rashis. And the King Club, as Akiva has pointed out, the big scandal in South Africa. It drops its scales later in life. That is also kosher. Areze mutar. Because it's basically only needs to be in the water. And it's only if it doesn't have snapir v'kaskezet b'mayin. But if while it's in the water, it has, so then it's not considered to be missing it. Now, as the Mishnah said, this is not our Mishnah, but this is the Mishnah Masechet Nida. Kol sheyesh lo kaskeset yesh lo snapir, v'yesh sheyesh lo snapir ve'en lo kaskeset. So this is a general observation that the fact is there are no fish that have scales and do not have fins. There is no such biological entity. So anything that has scales definitely has fins. There are fish that do have fins, as we know, very common actually, and that don't have scales. When was the last time you ate shark meat? So they've got, oh boy, do they have fins, huh? Everybody, oh my God, there's a fin, and they jump out of the water. But there ain't no scales, and that's enough to make it not kosher. So yesh lo kaskeset v'yesh lo snapir is a doctor. Yesh lo snapir ve'en lo kaskeset is a dog tame, which means that you really only need to check and see if it's got scales, because the fin's not going to help you one way or the other, since it might have fins, but it won't be kosher. So if that's the point, why do we even mention the fins? Let's just talk about the scales. Michte, akaskeset kasabchina. The bottom line is that the entire halacha, if determination of the kashrus of the fish is based only on having scales. So then just say that. Liktov rachman akaskeset v'lo liktov snapir. Why do we need to know anything about it? Well, maybe it's just a function of identification. Suppose the Torah had mentioned kaskeset and hadn't mentioned snapir, I might have thought that the kaskeset is a fin. Maybe the kaskeset is a snapir. And then I would have been matir any fish, even if it doesn't have any scales. Afilo dark tame. So maybe the Torah wrote the snapir v'kaskeset to make sure that I understand that one is the scales and one is the fins. Yeah, so, but which one is which? I mean, even now that the Torah writes snapir v'kaskeset, how do you know that when it says kaskeset, it's referring to scales if you say we don't know what the name means? Obviously, we know what the name means, for God's sake. I mean, we know Goliath. What was he wearing when he was showing up there and threatening the entire Machane Yisrael? He was wearing a shiryon of kaskasim. So obviously, how do we know now what a kaskeset is? From that pasuk. Mimai de kaskeset is a type of levusha that covers the body of the fish. We know that because of the pasuk of the shiryon kaskasim ulavush. So if we know what the word means, so then why did we have to have the two words? We're back where we started from. If we have both words, we still need to identify what it's referring to. So just stick with that. I know what a kaskeset is. There's no need for this snap here. Omar Rebbe Abo v'chein tana devei Rebbe Yishmael. The truth is we do not need it. For identification purposes, we do not need it. But, yagdil Torah v'yadir. Sometimes, the Torah gives us information which is more than we need to know, little boy. But nonetheless, if you'd like to understand life, then I'm giving you additional information in order for there to be more to learn and understand from the Torah. So maybe this snap here has an important role to play in the Heter. You need to understand that it is important. Even though it always accompanies the Kaskeset, by my telling you that the snap here plays a role in the Kashrut, this opens up the gates of understanding of what evolution and kashrus have to do with each other. So it may take you some thousands of years to understand, but that's called la'agdil Torah v'la'adira. And therefore, just because you don't see an immediate meaning to it doesn't mean that the Torah doesn't want to give you the information. Tana Rabba, mimashma sheneemar echol et sheyeshlo, shomea ani al tochal et sheinlo. We started off with these two psukim, and these two psukim seem to be very repetitive. You tell me what yes to eat, and then you tell me what not to eat. I mean, why do I need both of those? You know, you start off with etzeh tochlu, here's what you're allowed to eat. You know, and then you say, and these are the things called asher ein lo, so those things are, usher to you. Sheket saying lochem. So wouldn't I know, given one, that the opposite is the opposite, right? I mean, so if you tell me what I can eat, so then I understand what I can't eat. It says, eat only those things that have snapir v'kaskeset. Well, I understand on my own, shumeani alto chala che'enlo. And if you tell me, don't eat any fish that doesn't have snapir v'kaskeset, so I understand that I can eat any fish that does have. Shumeani echola che'yeshlo. So then I can eat the ones that do have. Why do I need both of these forms in the Torah? The two psukim seem to be just mirror images. So, lama shina'an, la'avor alav ba'asei uvelo tase. So, if we would have only the pasuk of sheket seim lachem, I know that there's a lo tase. But if I have a lav haba michlala say from et ze tochlu, so then I know that I'm involved here both in the Ase and in the lotase. Now, don't be silly and think that just because the essay over here is not really an essay, it's really telling me what not to do by putting it, framing it in these terms. It's not as if we have a special mitzvah to eat gefilte fish because that includes a lot of dagim sheishlem et zet tochlu. So we put together all of these species and make gefilte fish out of it. And we say we're being makayim a mitzvah asay. I mean, there are people who seem to believe that, but that's not what it means. The asay over here is a lav haba bichlal asay. So you're ask, okay, but so there is no real assay. I mean, it's just a question of a different way of phrasing what not to do, right? No, not right. There are two completely different ways in which we relate in the Torah to the Tzivui Hashem. And we know the whole question of Esedoichalot HaAseh, which one is the fundamental Aveda that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us in terms of responsiveness. There are two very different ways in which we respond to the Tzivui Hashem. To know that something is an Aseh, even though the only way to be Mekayim this Aseh is in the negative, doesn't change the fact that it's related to as an Aseh. And the Torah wants us to have both the Aseh and the lo tase. So fine. Now I understand why I have the positive formulation and the negative formulation. One is an asay and one is a lo tase. Okay. Now, when you say, etzeh tochlu mikol asher b'mayim. So when it says specifically at the beginning of the pasuk, etzeh tochlu mikol asher b'mayim, if you get to the end of the pasuk, it says, otam tochelu. I don't understand. If you're going to tell me what to eat, why do you first say, this is what you should eat? Give me the list and say, this is what you should eat? I mean, either one or the other, no? I mean, why are we saying it in this fashion? If it starts off with what you can eat, So why would it then tell me, if the whole meaning of the pasuk is to tell me what I can eat, why does it open with that ze tochlu mikol asher b'mayim? Because you might have thought, now this is a limud that requires patience, because it doesn't make sense right up front, and it's not even going to make sense by the end of today unless we go a little bit over time, a lot over time. But the general thrust of things will become rapidly clear, especially since we've already examined the hidden elements in this pasuk, which is that the pasuk is coming not only to tell us what is not kosher without the snapir v'kaskeset, but the pasuk is telling us where it is kosher without snapir v'kaskeset by specifying the bayamim u'banechalim in both of these pesukim, right? So that means that there's two completely different levels of what we're being dorish. We're being dorish what you're allowed to eat and what you're not allowed to eat. And then we're being dorish what you're allowed to eat without any simanim in certain circumstances or in certain environments. So that turns out to be a requirement that is going to relate to the hidden meaning of the pasuk that's not, doesn't jump right out at you. And it's going to explain why it is that we end up needing the pasuk to specify the things that it specifies that seem to be repetitive, like the repetition of b'mayim and b'mayim that we pointed out when we were reading it, or why we begin with the tzeh tochlu and end with the otam tochelu. If we understand that the pasuk has two completely different levels simultaneously, then you understand that the structure, this is wonderful stuff, it really is, then you understand that a multi-level presentation is going to require different things for each level of the presentation, which for the silly people who don't see the different levels of presentation is going to seem very strange. And then they're going to go write a learned book in University of Tel Aviv about how the editing of the J version was, and so on and so forth. Right? Okay. It's really hilarious. So anyway, fine. So this brisa comes to explain, and it's using words that if you don't understand what's going on, you think, what are you talking about? So the question over here is, what is this opening, which is strange in and of itself? Why are you asking me what is the opening? You should have asked, what is this closing, right? Otam tochelu, that's what doesn't make sense. I mean, it makes sense to start the pasuk, doesn't it, with the words of zot tochlu mikol asher b'mayim? We'll see why. When we understand what's going on, we'll see why the price's problem is with the opening and not with the closing. So zet et tochlu mikol asher b'mayim. Why do we need that? Ma tamud b'mayim. Well, Sheyachoyu might have thought that since this pasuk is basically coming to be matir things, it is, yes, because of the yamim u'banechalim, right? So since this pasuk is basically coming to be matir things, and we have two pesukim that are coming to be matir things, the first pasuk insists that it's b'yamim u'banechalim, and the second pasuk insists that it's limited, the iser is limited also to b'yamim u'banechalim. So these two psukim are both coming to be matir. Now, one of them is very openly shouting at you that it's coming to be matir. The other one is a little bit less clear. So one of them is beforash, and one of them is a little bit opaque. So that's called stum in this case, satum. It's hidden. We don't know which one is which. I don't know. It's going to take us, as I said, quite a while to figure out. It's going to turn out to be a machlokas, actually, which one is satum and which one is mefurash. But okay, I understand that we've got two remazim that are coming to be matir. So where it came to be matir, makashi yitir b'mefurash, the clear-cut heter is only where the water is bekelim. Because the only thing that is absolutal, not part of yamim u'banechalim, is where it's in your brita water bottle. And therefore, these things just appeared in there. And that's not what we were talking about needing fins and scales. So therefore, just like in the pasuk that is clearly matir, you can only be clear about the fact that it was matir in brita water bottles, af kish hitir bistam lo hitir ela bekelim. Given that, I would think that since the repetition of Bayamimu Banachalim uses the same set of references, Bayamimu Banachalim versus anything else. So since one of these psukim means versus containers, both of these psukim mean versus containers. How do I know that it does not have to be in a container? It could even be minayin lerabot borot shichinu me'arot. How do we know that if I have a cistern in the ground, not a brita water bottle in my refrigerator, and I want to take water and drink it from that cistern, and the cistern's full of water bugs, and I'm allowed to drink it, and I don't have to worry about whether these bugs have scales and fins and so on. They are not called sheketzulachem. How do I know that? You can bend down and drink from them, and you don't have to worry on anything that's scurrying around in that water. You can swallow it without any problems. How do I know that? Talmud Lomar. That's why we have the additional remez, which is an added eat me kol asher b'mayim. So that is the classical Yiddish mama. Es mein kind, yochlu anovim v'yismochu, and you can go right ahead and drink straight out of this pit and this cistern. So don't think it's got to be a bottle. That I learned from the extra words of tochlu mikol asher b'mayim, which is clearly coming to be marba. Now we're going to see, how does this work? Does it work with a klal prado klal? Does it work with a riboy miut? Is it just that? We'll talk about. Now you said, excuse me, I didn't quite catch that. You said the pasuk was coming to be matir? I was reading the pasuk was coming to tell me when I'm not allowed to. Ah, that's because, little boy, you don't know how to read. Heichan hitir bekelim. What did you mean? Well, look at the pasuk. Et zetochlu mikol asher b'mayim b'yamim u'banechalim. Why did it say only b'mayim u'banechalim? Because it's only bayamim ubanachalim hudechi eat leachol dolet veilotechol. These criteria are only meaningful if you are looking at some type of organism that is in the yam or in a nachal. That's where you need to be very careful about what you eat. But if this is in kelim, then it doesn't make any difference. You can effectively ignore it. So then, afagav the letle echol. You could eat even if it doesn't have these criteria. Wait a minute. Maybe it's the opposite. Maybe if it's in the kelim, you can't eat it at all. Maybe what it's saying is that if you find things that are growing in the ocean or in the rivers, so then you're allowed to eat it. But things that seem to have grown up in the kelim are not allowed to be eaten at all, even if they would have these kaskasim on them. Would not be kosher. Nah, that is for sure impossible. Why? Because of the next pasuk. The next pasuk says, "V'chol asher ein lo snapir v'kaskeset bayamim uvanachalim mikol sheretz hamayim." This is telling me where the iser is, and it says bayamim uvanachalim only. That's where, if it doesn't have the kaskasim, and then you're not allowed to eat it. That's the only time I'm telling you you're not allowed to eat it, which means that we don't have an iser of achila. And if it's bekelim, afagav de lesle echol. Since it says over here that the iser only obtains in cases where it's bayamim b'nechalim, you can't create a new iser. And the other pasuk can say, see, there's an iser, you can't eat it at all. If it's in kelim, nonsense. The pasuk that tells me the basis of an iser called sheketzulachem says that that iser only is applicable in yamim and echalim. So definitely it's not applicable in kelim. So don't give me that. That part is absolutely clear. Okay. So now, this idea of I understand that I need these two psukim. Seems to be what it is that the Tana has achieved. Now I know where it is that I need to have the simonim that the Torah gives us, and I know when I don't need the simonim that the Torah gives us. But why do I need these psukim like this? Couldn't I make it into a klal and a prat, and then actually I would say like this, Ve'ema, the pasuk said, Bamayim. Right? Now, Bamayim means in any kind of water. So that's a very broad klal. And that's how the pasuk began. Mikol asher Bamayim, kol asher lo snapir v'kaskeset. And then it says, but Beyamim u'benechalim is what I'm referring to. So it would be a klal and a prat. And a klal and a prat ain't b'klal ela masha b'prat. I don't need to look at this business about I have the second pasuk and the first pasuk and put it together. If you have a klal and a prat, ein b'klal ela masha b'prat, and that means that we are referring only to yamim and nechalim, and that's it. It would not include anything that is not precisely yamim v'nechalim. And therefore, I don't need to look into the fact that first I would have thought it's only kelim, and then I say, no, this is coming to add the extra pasuk of otam tochel. I don't need any of that. A klal and a prat is very specific. Either it's a yam or a nachal, or it's not. And that would mean even if you've got something that's in things that are flowing, they're ne'itzim, the charitzim, and it's even a man-made channel of water that's a charitz. There's no problem, and you don't need to have the snapir v'kaskeset for sure. If it's in things that are in kalim, I mean, obviously, or in a bar. I mean, that for sure. If you're telling me I could even eat it if I've got a fish pond and that fish pond is connected to water that's coming up, even that would be mutter. The kol shekein, the kelim and kol shekein, the standing water that's inside of a cistern, isn't that the proper way to learn it? No. Read the pasuk again. Et zeh tochlu mikol asher b'mayim, kol asher lo snapir v'kaskeset Bamayim. So why did it repeat Bamayim? That's a klal prado klal. It's got the second mayim. Now this comes to tell us again another very important din of klal prado klal. Because both of these Bamayims come before the prat. It says Bamayim, Bamayim, and then it says the prat. Bayamimu banachalim otam tochelu. And we're claiming that this is a klal prat uklal. This ain't no klal prat uklal. This is a klal klal uprat. Why are you telling me that I could have learned it from a klal prat uklal? Ah, because, asked the Gemara, aren't these two klalim smichi lahadadi without a prat between them? So it's a klal klal uprat? Omer Avina, yes indeedy. But this is like they say in Eretz Yisrael, K'di Amri b'ma'arava, Kol makom sh'ata motzei shnei klalot asmuchim l'azeh. If you've got two klalim next to each other, take the prat that follows, move it between the two klalim, and it fits into the klal prat uklal way of understanding the pasuk. So therefore, let's analyze this klal prat uklal. Bamayim, the first Bamayim is the opening klal. Then it says, because we're saying we're pretending, then it says Bayamim u'banachalim. That's a prop. Then we have Bamayim, which is the closing klal. Okay? Again, this is virtual, because we're told we're supposed to learn it this way. So this gives us a klal prat or klal. Iyatadan ela ke'ena prat. Okay? What is ke'ena prat? The ke'ena prat is Yamim u'banachalim. But it can't mean only Yamim u'benechalim because there's this ending klal that explains it. So what does it mean? Ma prat meforash mayim novim. The same way Yamim u'benechalim are flowing waters, meaning that noveh doesn't mean flowing, actually means it means coming up from under the ground. So it's connected to springs. Afko mayim novim. The only time we need this is in those types of situations. So what is that being marabah? Well, charitzim, ni'itzim, those are connected to water that's coming up from the ground. That is included, and you do need to have the snapir v'kaskeset. But my miyet, where you don't need it, is even, obviously in kelim, but even borot, shichin, me'arot, where you don't have actually a water coming up, that is standing water, that is leteirang. I don't want to keep you any longer. Yeah, I want to keep you longer. A little bit longer. I mean, I couldn't resist. Once I saw that Richie face, that did it. See, if I hadn't seen the Richie face, I would have said, nah, let's have rachamim. But looking at that pure enthusiasm, when you see that face, you know that you can't end without completing the sugya. Thank you, Richie. You didn't even have to say anything. It's just
incorrigible, Rabbi.
Unbelievable.
Incorrigible.
He really is. So the question is, maybe the thing to learn out of this klal prater klal is to say, just like the prat is mefurish, the amim and the nechalim, this is water that is on top of the ground. And that as long as it comes on the ground, which I mean it includes even barot shechin umarot, that's all water on the ground. And what is it, memayet? It's memayet only your water bottles in the fridge, because they're not on the ground. So miyet kelim, how do you know not to read it that way? Ah, because that, we said already, you need to have the et el tochlu, that comes to add that idea. And that tells us the extra tochlu would be that you need to have a additional expansion of the envelope. Okay, I don't want to review it with you because it's really not fair. Tomorrow we'll review the limud, and we learned some very important dinim b'chlal about klal prat u'klal for all over Shas here. And we learned that if you've got a klal prat u'klal where the klolim are not similar to each other, according to Tzadav Rabbi Shmuel, we learn it. And we learned that if you have a klal, klal, or prat, then everybody agrees you're supposed to put the prat in between the two klolim and darshanan. Okay, a wonderful beginning to a wonderful week. Bezrat Hashem, looking forward to more excitement coming up. As I say, that Richie face is absolutely irresistible. Kol tov, everyone.
Tunisia and Tunis are named for tuna.
Really? Wow.
That's what I learned there.
Wow.
That's such a center, so, you know.
That's amazing. Okay, now that tuna is in Barnea's neighborhood. That's amazing.
Kol tov. I wonder, is Sardinia the same thing?
Yeah, sardine for sure is, yeah.
I don't know. But red become the tuna tuna.
Right. Kol tov, everyone. Yes.